My name is Mike St. Clements. I'm a grad student at the University of Maine, and today I'll be talking about the effects of long-term experimental acidification on forest soil phosphorus. I'd like to take a moment and acknowledge my co-authors, Ivan Fernandez, my advisor from the University of Maine, Mary Beth Adams from the U.S. Forest Service, Steve Norton from the University of Maine, and Lindsay Rustad from the U.S. Forest Service. So the data I'm presenting today is part of what we've been referring to as the ALPS project, which stands for Aluminum and Phosphorus in Soils and Solutions. It's a whole ecosystem study looking at the pools and fluxes of aluminum, phosphorus, and iron from the atmosphere into soils and into soil solutions, through the soils into stream water and stream sediments, and finally into lake and lake sediments. And so for today's talk, I'll be focusing on the soils portion of this study. For our project, we have six study sites distributed throughout the eastern United States and western Europe. At each of these study sites, with the exception of Bear Brook in Maine, we have used a paired transect sampling design with transects running perpendicular to the streams. And on each one of those transects, we have 13 pedons we sampled for a total of 26 pedons per watershed. And at the Bear Brook watershed in Maine, we used a slightly different design where we resampled a network of 40 quantitative pits that were originally sampled in 1998. And for today's talk, I'll be focusing on the Bear Brook watershed in Maine and the Fernal Experimental Forest in West Virginia, as both these sites are whole watershed paired long-term acidification experiments. So to go over some of the major characteristics of the watersheds briefly, the Bear Brook watershed in Maine is spruce fir and northern hardwood vegetation. The spruce fir dominates the upper elevations of the catchments, and the northern hardwood forest is present in the lower elevations. The parent material is glacial till, and the soils are approximately 12,000-year-old spodosols. And at the Ferno Experimental Forest in West Virginia, we have central Appalachian hardwoods, and the soils are somewhere between 12 and 100,000 years old. They're formed in colluvial and residual parent materials. Their age is controlled by the erosional processes on the landscape. So as I said, these are paired acidification experiments, and look briefly at the treatments. At the Bear Brook watershed in Maine, we have the East Bear watershed, which serves as the reference, and the West Bear serves as a treated watershed. The treated watershed receives approximately 25 and 28 kilograms per hectare per year of nitrogen and sulfur. And at the Fernal Experimental Forest, we have Watershed 4, which serves as the reference watershed, and Watershed 3, or F3, is the treated watershed. And the treatments are slightly elevated with 35 and 40 kilograms per hectare per year nitrogen sulfur. I should point out that both these experiments were initiated in 1989, and they both use ammonium sulfate as an application, which makes them good for long-term comparisons of ecosystem processes and function due to acidification. So this graph here shows the ambient deposition and export of nitrogen and sulfur at the reference watershed at each site. I see things I want to point out here is essentially that at Ferno, the ambient deposition of nitrogen and sulfate is approximately double that occurring at Bear Brook. So now if we look at stream export from these catchments, we see that sulfur export at Bear Brook is slightly higher than that at Ferno, despite the increased deposition of sulfate at Ferno, and that's due to the greater sulfate absorption capacities of the Ferno soils. And when we look at nitrogen export, we see that East Bear only is exporting about 1/4 that nitrogen being exported by the streams at Ferno, and that's a result of the greater nitrogen deposition at the Ferno watershed. So to look at this data a little bit differently, we can look at stream sulfur and nitrogen export as a difference diagram. And here we have the treated watershed minus the reference watershed. So any positive value would indicate an increase in the export in treated watershed. We see here for sulfur that the magnitude of response to the treatment is greater at Bear Brook than at Ferno. And once again, that's due to the lower sulfate absorption capacity of the Bear Brook soils compared to that of Ferno. And when we look at nitrogen, we see a much greater response to treatment at Bear Brook with nitrogen. And that is due to the fact that the ambient deposition at the Bear Brook watershed is lower than that at Ferno. So the initial nitrogen limitation in the catchments has been exceeded with the treatment. And whereas at Ferno, we already have elevated background nitrogen deposition above that of Bear Brook, and we see less of a response to treatment. So the important point of this really is that as these treatments occur and the acid anions are leaving the system, this is balanced by base cations leaving the system as well, balance the charge. And what we have seen at these watersheds over time is that as the treatment occurs, we've seen increased calcium and magnesium leaving the watersheds. Yet as the exchange complexes in the soils are depleted of this calcium and magnesium, we've also started to see an increase in aluminum leaving these treated watersheds. And this data right here is an example of that process. And this is stream aluminum export from the Bear Brook watershed. And it's the West Bear, which is the treated watershed, minus the East Bear. So this line indicates the increase over time in aluminum being exported from the Bear Brook watershed in Maine. And we see that with the onset of treatments in approximately 1989, aluminum export from the Bear Brook watershed begins to increase and stays elevated throughout time. So, along with this increase in elevated aluminum export, we have seen at Bear Brook watershed and the treated watershed an increased export of iron and phosphorus during high stream discharge. We have also seen changing foliar chemistry in the West Bear, which is the treated watershed at Bear Brook watershed in Maine. And we've also seen increased root phosphorus concentrations in West Bear. So all of these things put together have led us to ask the question, can chronic ecosystem acidification alter phosphorus cycling as a result of metal mobilization? And that's to say that as this aluminum is being exported from the watershed due to treatment, is it possible that phosphorus, once associated with this aluminum, is also being mobilized? To attempt to answer some of these questions, we've used a phosphorus fractionation technique, which is modified from that of Senner in 1985. It was originally and usually is used for sediment phosphorus fractionation, but a review of the literature basically showed that this fractionation technique is derived from that of Chang and Jackson's original soil phosphorus fractionation techniques. And like all phosphorus fractionation or fractionation techniques, it tries to partition soil phosphorus into a set of operationally defined pools. So in this instance, we have our soil sample and we subject it to an extract of ammonium chloride, which gives us our labile or exchangeable phosphorus pool. And then we take the sample and we pass it on to a sodium dithionite extraction, which gives us a iron-associated P, or a reducible iron phosphorus pool. And then we continue on with a 0.1 molar sodium hydroxide extract, which gives us aluminum phosphorus. And we take this extract and we split the extract and do a Murphy-Riley phosphorus to get inorganic P, and then subtract that from ICP phosphorus to get organic phosphorus by difference. And then we do a 0.5 molar HCl extract, which gives us our calcium or apatite fraction, and lastly, a 1 molar sodium hydroxide, which gives us a residual pool. So to look at these pools and how they're distributed in the ecosystem, these two pie charts represent the distribution of phosphorus into those fractions for the reference watersheds' mineral horizons. And so these are grand averages representative of the two reference watersheds. And the thing I want to point out is that the aluminum phosphorus fractionation or fraction really dominates in both of these watersheds. And secondly, no matter which depth you move to in these watersheds or the forest type or the absolute amount of phosphorus present on the site, these distributions stay really similar. The aluminum phosphorus fractionation or fraction tends to be about 70-75% of the phosphorus present. So that was the way it's distributed, and now if we look at the total phosphorus, or the sum of those fractions, the concentration within the soils, we can get an idea of where the phosphorus occurs in the landscape. Here we have the depth measurements we sampled at the East Bear, the reference watershed at Bear Brook, and the depths we sampled at the reference watershed at Furneaux. And what we see is that the concentration of total phosphorus concentration at both watersheds, the 0 to 5 centimeter sample at East Bear and the A horizon at Furneaux, are highest in the surface of the soils. And phosphorus concentrations decrease as we move downward throughout the profile. So even if we look at that on a concentration basis, we see that the phosphorus is greatest in the surface horizons. But if we look at those same numbers on a mass basis, we see a complete reversal of the trend. So this is Bear Brook data, because we had the numbers to do that calculation. And on a kilograms per hectare basis, we see that the phosphorus trend is completely reversed. We see that in the surface horizons, we have very little phosphorus in the 0 to 5 centimeter, even though the concentration is greatest. And as we move downward in the profile, the greatest amount of phosphorus is in the C horizon, This dip here is really just indicative of the way we split up the soils, and it's just a fact of calling this 5 to 25 centimeters or 25 to C centimeters, but really it's increasing as we go down through the profile. So now that we've looked at where the phosphorus is occurring in the soils, it's important to ask which fractions contribute to this phosphorus mobilization. And here we have two charts, one representing the 0 to 5 centimeters, the Bear Brook watershed, and one representing the A horizon at the Ferno watersheds. So these would be the uppermost mineral horizons present on the site that we sampled. Other than that, the graphs are identical, and what we have is a difference diagram of the treated minus the reference watershed. So any positive value would indicate an accumulation of phosphorus within that pool in the watershed, while a negative value would indicate a depletion of that pool within the watersheds. So looking here, what I want to call your attention to at Bear Brook is the aluminum phosphorus pool. With treatment, we begin to see a trend, although not significant at Bear Brook, of depletion from this aluminum phosphorus pool within the watershed. And as we go over to the Ferno watershed, we see the same trend, but this time it's statistically significant depletion of aluminum-associated phosphorus within the treated watershed at the 0 to 5 centimeters, and also a significantly statistically significant depletion of the residual phosphorus pool within the watershed. So, in conclusion, what we see is that the aluminum phosphorus fraction does dominate in all watersheds at all depths, and that the majority of this phosphorus mobilization is due to acidification from the aluminum P fraction. We see evidence of P mobilization only in the upper soil horizons, and we see that the deeper soil increments show no response to this treatment. So, acidification does appear to alter phosphorus biogeochemistry, but further work is needed to fully understand the evolution of these mechanisms over time and the effects of biocycling on these phosphorus fractions. And with that, I can take any questions.
We have a couple minutes for questions, if you have any for Michael.
I was just going to say, those are huge phosphorus.
Well, it's tough to say, and I think that's one thing we need to tease out. I think that the fact that on a mass basis, the smallest pool is in the 0 to 5, or the uppermost soil horizons, and that's where we're starting to see the depletion, is possible, but I need to do the calculations to see if what we're losing from the site in the stream is, I haven't done yet, is significant enough to impact that on a overall watershed basis. And I think that the evidence of increased, perhaps, root phosphorus and the roots in the treated watershed and changes in foliar chemistry in the treated watershed phosphorus may indicate that it does have some effect on biology. Lindsay? And actually, yes, at Bear Brook, what I showed there was a slide without partitioning out the softwoods from the hardwoods, and it's a similar trend at Bear Brook, but if you go to how I showed that the Bear Brook depletion wasn't significant, if you go towards look at just the softwoods, that trend becomes much closer to significant in the surface of just the softwoods. Brad?
What's your negative
It would be during just the high discharge is when we see the increased aluminum in the stream, and as we get the acid waters flowing through the upper soil horizons, the most acidic soil horizons, we think that the lowered pH in this flow can dissolve aluminum, amorphous aluminum hydroxide, which is absorbed, P absorbed to it, releasing it at that time.
We have time for one more question.
If I look at your
output from the watershed. Are those annual differences that we started to see towards the end of the series due to concentration differences, or is that driven by just water flow?
For the aluminum graph?
Yes.
Those look like the water, the precipitation graphs.
If there are any other questions, we can hold them until the discussion session.